Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Monday morning, President's Day, February the 16th, 2026, 2:16:26, 14 and a half minutes past the hour, and a very, very foggy President's Day morning. Now, if you're going to go out today, be very careful. It is like pea soup outside. I could not, when I was at McDonald's, when I was in McDonald's parking lot this morning, or drive-thru, I guess I should say, I could not see Walmart or Kroger, which are all in the same parking lot, from the drive-thru at McDonald's. And when I was turning into the parking lot here this morning at the station, I could not see the traffic that was coming in my direction, which you have to be very cognizant of, because you have to wait for that traffic to pass by before you can make the turn, until they were almost right up on me. So it's very, very foggy out there this morning. So if you're going to be out there, be very, very careful. Well, what a busy weekend it was. We had Friday the 13th on Friday. We had Valentine's Day on Saturday, and today's President's Day. And certainly Friday was a very busy news day, to say the least, here in Marion. Of course, the big story Friday was that Marion City Police Officer Brendan Damron, age 24, was taken into custody. I guess this happened on Thursday night, but we heard about it on Friday, and is being held at the Morrow County Jail, charged with two counts of first-degree felony rape and one count of third-degree felony abduction. And apparently this is an adult female family member. So, you know, it's an ugly story. We talked about it very briefly on Friday night, but what can you say? A Marion City police officer arrested on two counts of rape, one count of abduction. It's a family member. Of course, we don't identify victims, so if you know who it is, you know who it is. If you don't know who it is, you don't know who it is. But boy, oh boy, that is not the kind of story that you want bouncing around. And I guess we'll see how it plays out. We certainly will see where this all goes, but it's just an awful story. And I think the problem is that, and why a story like this gets a lot of traction, and it certainly did in Columbus News and a whole lot of other places in Ohio, is because we want to think that police officers are above reproach. They are here to protect us. They are here to help us. And rape is one of the ugliest allegations you can have against you. Certainly you throw in abduction, and then you think a family member is involved here. So it's just not good on any level. All right, go ahead, caller.
Love your city.
Oh, of course, even on President's Day.
I feel so safe and secure with our police department. What kind of a screening process do they have up there?
Well, to be honest with you, I think that Sheriff Bales and Jay McDonald have handled this properly. When I guess the police chief became aware of it, he turned it over to the sheriff, and the sheriff did make the arrest. So, and the police chief did immediately put the person on administrative leave. So I think they've handled it.
Unpaid administrative leave, or paid?
You know, it doesn't say. It just says administrative leave. But
now, where did this occur? Did it occur in Marion County?
Well, I'm guessing in Morrow County, because it says that's where he's being held, but I don't know. That's the only information that's been given because the investigation is still going on.
Well, I guess if it is all taking place in Morrow County, Ray Grogan is probably breathing a sigh of relief.
Oh, no, he's involved.
Oh, he is.
He's involved.
Well, hopefully he's learned from the travesty of the Ratliff case.
Well, I think he did give a quote here. I don't think we had it on the news this morning. This is the quote that he gave on Friday. Let me find Grogan's quote. He says, "The people of the county elected me to prosecute the crimes that happen here, and my prosecutors and I will take this serious case to court." He said, "Our office does not represent the city, and we have the experience and independence to lead this prosecution."
Wow, that makes me feel a whole hell of a lot better knowing that Ray Grogan's on the job.
Yeah.
Well, like a bullshit statement, really.
Well, that's what he said. And yeah. Apparently I'm being told by one of our listeners this morning that it happened in Marion County outside the city limits, so he's being held in Morrow to avoid any conflicts.
I wonder why in Morrow County? What's wrong with the Tri-County Jail?
I'm not sure. I don't know. It's just an awful story, as I said, and I don't know how that was picked or how that was done, but here we go. Well, probably because he's a police officer and they wouldn't want to send him to the to any jail that would be seen as a conflict.
I don't know what that meant, but...
Lot of people he worked with might be working at that jail, I think would probably be the conflict.
Well, more than likely, the conflict that anybody else in jail, hey, this is a cop, man, you know, which they can make special arrangements to isolate him.
Well, I think everybody knows that. I think everybody probably knows that now. I don't know much more about it, but I guess we've got to have faith in the investigation that's going on.
Well, I don't know. After the Ratliff case, we had nothing but Keystone cops and a Keystone prosecutor. So, hey, who knows? To a better tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I do just want to get Matt Bales, Sheriff Bales, quote in here from Friday. My team and I learned of these allegations and immediately began gathering evidence. And once we had enough to make an arrest, we took Damron into custody, Sheriff Matt Bales said. My office is separate from the independent of the City of Marion Police Department, and we will be the lead investigators in this matter. So there you go. That's what's going on. And it's an awful story, as I said. I don't know how you can say it's not an awful story. It's an awful story. You don't want a story like this. And it certainly has played out in the Columbus media now. Allegations are allegations. And I guess the investigation will have to be conducted. It involves a family member. We know that. And where does it go from here? I don't know. It's just difficult. And again, aside from reporting what happened, I really don't know how much deeper you can go into this. But it's clear from our first caller here this morning, in a normal world, if a story like that happened, and it has, but in a normal world, people would be very much probably against the person accused of committing the crime. Accused of committing the crime. But here, that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case, which I think is kind of interesting. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I am okay. I had to wake up real early, and I'm driving back to school. But I think a few other people might have brought this up, because I read about this on Friday. Thursday like everyone else. And I saw the video that the sheriff and the prosecutor put out, and I can only think of one other time that they've put out a video when someone was charged with a crime. If you catch my drift, and I can't help but wonder if this is, without the, you know, talking about the case itself, if it's any sort of posturing to try to save face after, the Ratliff stuff.
Well, you know, it is very interesting, and I'm not saying these things line up at all, but we were having a conversation at the radio station on Friday because this news story broke Friday afternoon, and we had it up, and it was obviously getting a lot of attention around the state and locally here. And, you know, it is very interesting, and all of this could be coincidence, and maybe it is. I don't know. But it is interesting that it involves somebody who would be high profile, a Marion City police officer. It's the same crime, rape. It's going to be played out in front of the news because it is a high-profile person. And once again, here comes a video. The sheriff's in it this time. He wasn't in it the first time with the Ratliff case. But here comes the sheriff in the video with Ray Grogan. And again, you're probably right. I can't think of any other time a video has been released. Certainly not that quickly, because the video was out almost simultaneously with us learning about this story. So again, within 24 hours and the investigation not being complete, you know, there are a lot of similarities. Now, I'm not saying the crimes are the same here, but there certainly are a lot of similarities.
And, you know, especially as, you know, after that acquittal and as you're facing this huge lawsuit, I mean, you want to try to, I don't know, just in the eyes of the public, try to save yourself and say, hey, you know, we did this video for one guy, now we're going to put out a big statement, make a big deal about it for others. But, I mean, you look at his Facebook page, and there's a lot of other people, unfortunately, who have been charged or pled to, you know, bad F1 sex crimes like that. They don't, you know, they don't get videos.
Well, and I think, the other coincidence here is it's a family member. We know it's a family member.
So, I don't know. I mean, and this makes me think of, again, if a police officer is charged with something, just the law enforcement ties. I'm not saying all police officers, you know, I'm not saying a prosecutor would, you know, try any less hard to prosecute a police officer. But just in knowing what we know about Marion and knowing what we know about, you know, the ties of the FOP to Marion and things that our prosecutor has done in the past, it, you know, calls for at least, you know, asking questions. And who knows about the case, but it's just really interesting, especially, you know, a month after the acquittal, a couple weeks after the acquittal, they're doing this, is there, you know, lawsuits pending against the county, and
well, it's interesting because exactly what we're talking about is what I was trying to convey the entire 2 years of the Ratliff trial. That no matter what happens, nobody will survive this unscathed. Their reputation and their lives will be changed forever. Now, Ayers and his family have obviously described why their lives will be changed because of the accusations of the crimes and what they went through. But I've always said Ray Grogan faces exactly the same thing. And because if our prosecutor was not Ray Grogan and he had not went through the high-profile Ratliff trial, we would not be having this discussion this morning about his conduct and the similarities between this and the Ratliff trial. That conversation would not be happening. And the reason that it is because of the Ratliff trial. And again, he'll never get away from that. It will never be not a part of his history, and here it is, you know, just less than a month, as you say, after the acquittal, a police officer is charged with two counts of rape and a one count of abduction, and we're giving the police officer the benefit of the doubt mainly because of the prosecutor.
Yeah, And just, I really wonder, I mean, I went to the trial one day, and they were like, there were four or five prosecutors at the prosecution table. I mean, are they going to go all out? Like, you know, I would really hope that any prosecutor's office would want, would, against any, you know, heinous, you know, against any heinous crime like this, they'd go all out. They would pack the courtroom with, you know, police officers, and they would, you know, they would put four or five prosecutors at the prosecution table. Just to, you know, show that, you know, you're going all out, you're trying to protect the victim or, you know, whatever, you're trying to get justice here. But, you know, I would hope that what he did in the Ratliff trial is, you know, he would do that for everybody if he's really, you know, not in the tank for anybody, or I don't know. But yeah, like you say, if this were in Franklin County or Delaware County, you would, the story would be the allegations. The story wouldn't be circumstances around the allegations, who's bringing, you know, who's prosecuting them. And if, you know, if I were a victim advocate in this case, it would be like, you know, let's get a special prosecutor in here immediately, and, you know, who knows how, you know, this could be painted.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I'm starting to... I don't understand the videos, because a press release will get into the newspaper. Obviously, we're talking about a press release here this morning. Why do people do these videos? I mean, is it so the television stations will run them? I guess I don't get that.
I mean, I just, because watching any news story about anything, I mean, a big part of it is the B-roll, and what, you know, is kind of what kind of plays in the background while the news people are talking. So, you know, it's just to get their faces out there. I mean, yeah, there's a, you know, I'm sure the county has some pretty able PR people. I mean, I guess I should walk that back, but they have PR people, so I don't know why they, you know, statement would have sufficed. And, you know, just think of, I might be losing my mind, and I might just be focused on only the word Marion when I read the news, but I swear, we have had some really bad luck in the last year and a half. I don't see Marysville, I don't see Reynoldsburg, or Pickerington, or Hilliard, with, you know, the problems with law enforcement, the problems with the water, just, I don't know.
Not a good time around here. The problems with the auditor's office, that was on the news last week. Problems with the Ratliff trial, which was constantly in the news. I mean, it's been an ugly 2-year period, and I don't know. It's going to take a long time to recover from this in people's perception. You know, they always say when you move into to a new area, you check the school districts, you check what's going on there. Well, the news has really done a number of, just last week, I don't know how many stories were run on Marion in the Columbus News, and they were all very, very, very negative. And I don't know what you do about it. And then we had the gentleman killed by the train and the child injured. I mean, that's not necessarily a negative story on Marion, because that can happen. But it's not a positive story by any stretch of the imagination, and that's why Friday was a busy news day. But, you know, here we are, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, I just think, you know, I don't think Marion's ever been perfect, but, you know, we stray further and further every day from Lanier City.
Well, as which I,
the,
yeah.
Which the big irony of that is, you know, I don't know if we were this painted in the eyes of the public Before we spent all that money on, you know, the slogan and the marketing, and, you know.
Well, I have said this recently. I have said, and I do believe Mayor Collins wants to increase morale in the city. I believe that. But in his time as mayor, the morale in the city is probably at an all-time low. Now, I don't blame that on him. It's just when you try to rebrand yourself, which is a term popular in this era, when you try to rebrand your city and you get so much blowback from it and so many negative stories, it almost becomes, it looks a little hypocritical. And I think we've made a big, big mistake with that. I don't know. It's just an ugly, ugly situation.
You know, I think of one of the problems with the rebranding, I'm the first one. I love redesigns and marketing and reading about that stuff, and I think it's cool. But, deep down, we are led by Republicans, the party of allegedly fiscal conservatism. And we, there's so much elective spending on ticky-tack stuff, like all the stickers and the wraps and all that. You see we got all new street signs downtown, all that. Yet we keep seeing news about we're out of money or we can't complete, audits. It's an admirable campaign. It's a good idea, but everything surrounding it kind of puts an asterisk above it.
Well, I think the only problem I have ever seen with the Love Your City thing is that if you love your city, you've got to love your neighbor. And if you love your neighbor, you've got to work with your neighbor to solve the problem. And it seems like there is not a lot of cooperation from the administration with people they don't want to deal with. Now, if they want to deal with them, great. But if they don't want to deal with them, there's not even a dialogue. And I think that creates divisiveness. And you can't do it. I've often said, I don't have a problem with Mayor Collins. I've known him a long time, since he was police chief. But his biggest failing is going to be that he doesn't speak to the media. He's a former police chief himself. If he was able to come on this morning and speak to this and speak to what's going on in the city, because they're both still very big stories, it would help the city. But we don't have that.
I don't know it's 100% a Mayor Collins thing or, a city thing. I think it partially is, but it's just the nature of politics. And you love, I think a lot of people like to bring this up. The all local politics are now national, and, nationally no one gets along, so why would they get along here?
Well,
different sets of issues, here we're fixing potholes and taking trash out. Nationally, they're doing all the different stuff, but it goes back to just people don't know the difference, or they don't care to know the difference.
Hey, I do have a question for you while I have you on the line, since you brought up politics. A good weekend for Amy Acton. She picked up the endorsement of Ohio's biggest union. She's drawing big crowds seemingly everywhere she goes. David Pepper was on the program last Thursday. I thought he handled himself very well. We're not seeing much from Vivek Ramaswamy. He's got a primary coming up here in less than 2 months on the Cinco de Mayo. Amy Acton really coming in strong here. The endorsement from the biggest union in Ohio is quite something.
Was that the AFL-CIO?
I believe so.
I don't remember. I guess it's not surprising. It certainly feels good, especially because, in the last 10 years, labor has sort of, for some strange reason, kind of gravitated more towards the Republicans. When you think of populism and the rise of Trump, it makes sense, but when you peel back the layers of who's really fighting for what, it doesn't make much sense. But it's certainly a welcome boost, and as a lot of people say, she needs to run it's Ohio. And she and David Pepper need to run a flawless campaign. And most importantly, that includes rallying your troops and getting them out to vote. So I think the endorsement of the union is a great thing. And I was talking about this to someone over the weekend at lunch. They were asking, about the experience that both the lieutenant governor picks have. And my thoughts on, because, even though David Pepper was a county commissioner, he doesn't really have that much elected experience compared to Rob McCauley. But my thoughts were, a Democrat hasn't been able to do much governing in Ohio in the last 15 or 20 years. And to be able to govern, you need to be a good campaigner, and David Pepper is great on the stump. He's great.
Well, and that kind of leads me to my next point, you know, give some praise, but also some criticism. You know, we're less than 9 months away from the election here, and I'm still kind of shocked that Amy Acton is not holding rallies. She is not holding events that the public is invited to. It's pretty much Democratic Party members that are invited to it. It's kind of a private list that goes out. It's not open to the public. And I'm kind of surprised that she's not doing any media. Now, I appreciate she did the interview back with us in October, and I appreciate that David came on last week, but she doesn't do media. She doesn't open her events to the media. She does not invite, it's not like Amy Acton's having an event in Marysville, everybody come see what she has to say. You know, I think that might be the only flaw she's got going on right now, and it could be a fatal flaw if that doesn't change.
Now, in fairness to them, I think the Republicans do a lot of the same thing. I remember when I was, I think, a junior, would have been a sophomore, in high school, J.D. Vance was doing an event at the FOP Lodge out on 309, and Donald Trump Jr. was there, but that was a, you know, Republican Party event, you know, by invite only. So it's not just something that the Democrats do, but I did notice that Amy Acton announced David Pepper at a roundtable event.
Yeah, bad event, bad idea.
This is at a rally, and, you know, I've always, because, you know, I've you know, been in the position where I, you know, can ask people, you know, like, why don't we do a rally? Or, like, you know, in 22, why didn't we get Tim Ryan and Nan Whaley and all the Supreme Court candidates? Because the Dems do a big rally with all their people once a year, and it's, you know, but you got to pay to get in, and it's in downtown Columbus. Like, you know, we can do that, but let's do a rally. And, you know, it's just so much more appealing to see than a roundtable. The Democrats love doing these roundtable discussions at coffee shops and stuff. But what plays better, just optics on, again, B-roll on a TV, that would be the rally. And they need to be doing more of it. Now, it's going around and mobilizing your base, always a good thing. But, you know, more and more rallies.
Well, here's what I don't understand about it. From my understanding, she is drawing big crowds. But even forget the perspective of the media, which I'm standing up for here, because of course we do want to ask her questions. Of course we do want to cover the event and get it out to people. But the other thing is, you're not inviting independents to the event. You're not inviting people who might be on the fence. You're not saying, hey, if you want to vote for Amy Acton, come down to this event and hear what she has to say. You're kind of alienating a whole group of people, and I don't understand that with less than 9 months left to go.
Now, I don't think they're expressly saying invite only or Democrats only. I think it's, you know, sort of shared around on Facebook and such, and if an independent were to see it, they could think, you know, oh, I'm sure I could show up there. You know, they're not going to be turning away people at the door.
Now, but, see, you know, that's interesting, though. Now, if somebody showed up from the media, would they turn them away?
I don't know, Scott. I think you should go try to find out.
Apparently, I should just try to walk in. Because, like, the
investigative journalism.
Well, it's just interesting because the event she did here in Marysville a couple weeks ago, I could not find one bit of publicity on it. I could not find one advertisement for it. And if I can't find that and I'm looking, how could anybody else find it to attend the event who was not personally invited?
We must be on different sides of Facebook because I saw a bunch of stuff about it. But in fairness, I follow all the groups and, you know, the pages and the clubs for all the neighboring.
Well, let me put it this way. It wasn't on her page, and it wasn't on her Facebook.
And I think that's a flaw. I mean, you know, you would see, sometimes you'll see candidates, they'll do a list, like on Sunday I'll be in Akron, and on Monday I'll be in Youngstown. Like, you know, they'll sometimes do things like that. But, you know, the Dems have a great platform that we use to book people for, you know, events. We need to do that more for, you know, the campaign stuff. I would have to imagine as we get closer to the, because, you know, I remember Rich Cordray, you know, he, you know, the last Democrat really had a shot. He only started to do rallies in September, October, and he brought in the heavy hitters, so.
Well, I think it was earlier than that, because I remember him coming over and speaking at the Union Hall in over on 309, and they made it a point when they were going to come to a place to not only invite the Democrats, but they would invite the media. And I don't know, it's just a weird campaign. I've never seen a, usually, even if they can't invite the public, they try to invite the media. That way the public knows that they were there and gets to hear them. I'm just not sure how people are supposed to hear from Amy Acton except the stuff that she's putting out.
At that point, it might, from my experience, it would be more of a local party thing. Like, you know, if she's going to Morrow County, you would, you know, try to find on Facebook who's running the Morrow County Democratic Party. Ask them for, you know, send their page a Facebook message. Those are always, you know, people are always checking those. So at that point, my thought would be to, you know, talk to those people. Kind of at the local level who are facilitating the events.
Well, we'll see what happens, but she did get the endorsement, so that's certainly a big plus for her. One more thing I wanted to get your thought on, because you are in college, a matter of fact, headed back to college this morning. What do you make of what went on at OSU last week with the professor at Ohio State who assaulted the cameraman? He now is on paid leave.
I have a funny take on that. Like, the guy that recorded the fight from the other angle, he that blogger, he is a Marion native. And the first interview with Gordon Gee was a Marion interview. So, you know, we've gone global at this point.
We've gone full circle, haven't we?
Full circle. I don't know. I mean, I am familiar with the works of the Rooster, this blogger. I mean, he walks around the state house with a GoPro, and he, you know, just asks state legislators questions, Republicans and Democrats. He's an equal opportunity offender. And especially with all of Ohio State's antics, you know, not only, you know, Epstein and Wexner, but the Jim Jordan, the wrestling stuff. I mean, a lot of people have a lot to answer for. You know, especially in Columbus politics, on both sides. And when you have, you know, the former president of the university, yes, it's not, I listened to that snippet of your interview with Gordon Gee, it's not, you know, journalism in the true sense. It's, you know, like, not what you do, where you, you know, reach out, you want to sit down, you're not as crass and aggressive. But in the eyes of a lot of people, you know, very few people have been talking about this from the university. So, you know, I don't think there's a difference between me bumping into Gordon Gee outside of a bathroom and asking him this question. The only difference between me and this blogger is that the blogger had a camera. But I don't know. I mean,
well, here's the difference. Yeah. I think. The difference is, you know, do anything you want. I guess that's the world we live in. But I don't think it's just a happenstance that you are in the hallway where the Gordon Gee is in the bathroom with a camera ready to go to ask a question. Clearly, I think they knew what they were doing. They knew where he was, and they knew this was a chance to get this camera in front of his face. Now, to Gordon Gee's credit, he did stop. Now, he didn't say anything to them. I did see that. He really doesn't say anything to them, except that Wexner never talked about Epstein in front of him. So, you know, there wasn't really any information ascertained. Now, in the interview I did with him, I think 2 days later, he talked about all those subjects. He talked about Wexner. He talked about the what happened in the hallway. He talked about the Ohio State sex scandal. He talked about student loan debt, which is apparently why the guy was thrown down. So I think it's the approach. I mean, I think Gordon Gee's quote was that these people were aggressive, borderlining on obnoxious.
Well, I admittedly kind of snickered when he called them obnoxious, because, I mean, you've got to look at it from the perspective of any Ohio State alum or really anyone in the Columbus area. Like, the university has been dead silent on this stuff for such a long time, and so many people have just been begging and waiting for answers. So a lot of people, it's just sort of like, you know, if, you know, we're going to talk to you the first chance we get. And, you know, if it's obnoxious, you know, so be it. You know, you're making, you know, you're the the president emeritus of Ohio State. Like, you know, you're going to go home and you'll be just fine. But, yeah, I mean, these are, you know, not orthodox tactics. But, you know, I think in this day and age where just people are so tired of, you know, being strung along and waiting for answers, the first chance they get, they're going to take it.
Right, but did they get anything? I mean, what information, if truly that was to get information about Lex Wexner, and should his names be taken off of buildings, and what is the relationship between Epstein and Wexner, what did they get from Gee?
Probably nothing, but it's the optics of, now, yes, I don't think anyone likes the optics of camping outside of a bathroom waiting for somebody.
And following him into the elevator, which is why the professor got angry. I mean, they followed him down the hallway after he had spoken to them. They were trying to follow him into the elevator. I mean, at what point? I think that's probably the aggressive, obnoxious part.
Well, and all that's completely undone by this professor attacking the
absolutely. You can't attack
cameraman.
People. You cannot attack
but,
people.
I don't know. I mean, granted, I haven't watched the whole thing because I'm not a big confrontation guy myself. It makes me cringe. But I don't know. I'm sure that, you know, especially you and, you know, your traditional journalistic tactics got you much further with Gordon Gee than anyone else would have gotten.
Well, and I think that's it. When I went down there, I mean, we had no idea. There was no set questions that we could or could not ask President Gee. So I asked him every single question I wanted to about all of these scandals, and he did answer them. He didn't say I can't talk about that in any context. So I guess I'm just a little confused. And why is that not being covered by the... If these people truly wanted answers, well, there are the answers you wanted. Now, why aren't you using those? Why? So is information really important to you, or is clicks important to you?
I think, you know, on the other hand, I'm sure there's a little bit of, you know, I don't know if bias is the right term or agenda is the right term, but it's definitely sort of, you know, they sort of know what he thinks about Wexner going into it and how he, you know, doesn't believe Wexner is guilty by association. So it's sort of just, you know, kind of pressing him and making Gordon Gee just say again for the world this stuff. But evidently he didn't really say much of anything. So, you know, at the end of the day, you got more accomplished in your interview than they did in their interaction.
Hey,
I think the most interesting thing here, this is at the Ohio State University's Center for Intellectual Diversity, you know, conservative sort of movement, because a lot of conservatives think that they're in the minority of thought on college campuses. That was the whole thing with SB1 and DEI and all that. So this is a conservative sort of pointed institution where... at Ohio State, where Gordon Gee and this professor are at that day. And it's this conservative professor who, you know, attacks someone for having a different point of view. And I think that's a great representation of where we are right now.
I want you to to hang on the line for just a second, because what I want to do, I want to play, because a lot of people didn't hear that clip last week, I just want to play a clip of the interview that I did with Gordon Gee on Thursday. This is the clip where we're talking about Wexner, we're talking about the OSU scandal, we're talking about what had happened earlier in the week with the cameraman being thrown down. This is Gordon Gee with me on Thursday. Now, this full interview will air this coming Wednesday. So, here is the clip. Take a listen, and we'll come back and talk about it.
I just want to go through a couple of these things that
people are talking about. Yeah. You can say what you want about them or not what you want about them. You were on WOSU in January, and the quote that everybody is talking about is you were talking about Les Wexner, who's in the news, and you said, this is cancel culture going wild. If you believe that there is even some scintilla of an issue, sometimes people just want to go to DEFCON 2, that's silly. People got angry about this.
Yeah,
what do you make of it?
Well, I think that they didn't have a right to get angry. They can get angry because that's what it is. Because look, people take great pride in seeing people who have achieved great things or have great work to see them fall. And, you know, I know Mr. Wexner very well. I was on his board. He was the chairman of my board here. A few people know him any better, and I can say unequivocally that I think that he is a man of great values and great integrity, and we need to let the process play out. I mean, why would we ever condemn someone because of the fact that they associated with someone else? And we don't know how long the association or everything. So I do believe that we have this cancel culture, and I use it again. You know, people don't see the right thing, and then all of a sudden they're a pariah, and people get bullied because of the fact that they don't think for you, and some people think they ought to think. The First Amendment is the First Amendment, and it needs to be. We need to reacquaint ourselves as an American public with the First Amendment, which is all about free speech and about the ability to be able to think and do and say what we want to say, to be able to be held responsible, but not to be given a characterization in which there is no need to do so. If facts came out that were damning, I think we all know that Jeffrey Epstein was a terrible person. But he knew a lot of people who probably had no idea about all the things that he was doing. And I don't think it's fair to condemn everyone who even had a relationship with him just simply because of the fact that he was a terrible person.
And I don't want to get too deep into this because I know there are some legal issues here, but the documentary last year, Surviving Ohio State, came out, and that now is a part of Mr. Wexner's history that he will have to testify in regard to that. Did you watch the documentary? No. What do you just make of that whole story in general?
I think, again, it's one of those things that I look back on, 30 years later, and obviously it's a terrible story, but it was something that if I would have been aware of it, I would have taken care of it. But obviously, in a very complex university, you're not aware of everything. There is no evidence whatsoever that my office do anything about it. This one guy here saying that my name is mentioned 33 times in the Perkins Foy. Probably it is, because I was president of the university. Your name was mentioned when you were the president of the university. I mean, so the fairness factor is very important. But I did not watch it. And I just don't talk about ideas that are being litigated right now.
Right. But you did not know about it. Is how, yeah. And the other thing, and then we are going to get to education, because that is what I want to talk about here, just happened this week. And maybe this is just wrong place, wrong time, but people wanted to interview you earlier this week. We're taping this on Thursday afternoon. Some people who do blogs, and I think a documentarian, came up to you in a hallway. I think you had come out of the restroom, and a professor here had an altercation with one of those.
Well, yeah, you know, I didn't quite see all of the altercation. But I do know that the bloggers were being extremely aggressive, to the point that they were obnoxious. And I think that's not fair, you know. I mean, being good. Yeah, I mean, so I had been teaching a class for 3 hours. I was teaching the class. And so I came out, went to the bathroom, and when I came out, and I was curious to them about, I just talked about civility earlier. I think that the young guy, the young faculty member, they really got in his face, and he was in a role playing the Good Samaritan. I'm not condemning anyone, but I am saying that I think that incivility should not be rewarded.
We want to take a quick break here, come back with President Ngee, and we're going to finish up the program right after this. We're going to talk education and maybe the future of journalism. That's something interesting.
Oh, Alan.
Hey, we'll talk about that after this short, but you talked about it in the event that happened this week. What do you make of journalism today that doesn't request an interview like we have done and just needs you in all ways?
As everything in life, there are really people who are absolutely superb. But what has happened with journalism is the fact it's no longer journalism. Journalism is about seeking the truth, not seeking a political opinion, not enhancing a political opinion. I think, for example, what we're doing right now, you're a great journalist because we had a discussion, you asked that question, but you did not put a spin on it that was defensive or offensive. And I think that what is happening so often right now is that the world of journalism, as defined by what would be a good journalism, really does not exist. And I'm talking about from the far right and from the far left. I'm not condemning one side or the other. I'm condemning the fact that I do not know what happened to seeking truth and power.
Gordon Ngee, taped Thursday at Ohio State. The interview will air Wednesday morning. Christian, what do you make of it?
I just can't get over, you know, the fact that he is giving Wexner a pass on this. I understand a mistaken association with somebody before you knew about all their misdeeds. It's fine. But Les Wexner was an unindicted co-conspirator in a child sex trafficking case. Like, I feel like that's a pretty big deal. And this is, you know, one of the most premier institutions, at least at one point, in the country, the Ohio State University. And I feel like, you know, you're in a little bit of a different position. I mean, we have, you know, after long last, we finally have politicians in Columbus, you know, the members of Columbus City Council, Mike Carey, Joyce Beatty, they are returning their campaign donations from Les Wexner and his affiliated groups. And, you know, they didn't even really know the guy. They didn't really know Les Wexner. Gordon Ngee, I guess, maybe it gives him a better point of view. He actually knows Les Wexner. So of course you're more, you know, going to be more willing to defend someone, especially in your position at the university. I understand that from a PR perspective, but also this isn't just, you know, this isn't like Les Wexner and his wife went, you know, had dinner with Jeffrey Epstein in New York City one time.
We got to go to break. There's more to talk about here.
Okay.
Hopefully you can call in next hour and some other people as well, because I think there's more to talk about in that clip, and I would like to do that. So hopefully, can you stick with us and call in possibly next hour?
Yeah, I'm just pulling back to my dorm now, but I got to go walk my car back down, so I'll call back in.
All right, sounds good. We're going to take a break. Come back right after this.
Walks into the room where you are, that you have a kind of a fluttering in your heart